Good morning. My name is Sandra Kim, Deputy Public Defender, here on behalf of Petitioner Appellant, Mr. David Hostetter Bailey, and I would like to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal. There are two main issues in this case. Number one, the trial court erred in concluding that Mr. Bailey was driving without due care. And number two, the ICA erred in concluding that a collision occurred, which could be relied on to sustain a conviction for inattention to driving. Now, it should be noted that the trial court made no findings as to a collision. However, on appeal, the ICA concluded that a collision did occur. And because the ICA stated in its summary disposition order that a collision was a third element, it appears that the ICA thought that a collision was a required element in finding a conviction for intention to driving. Now, the ICA.
Ms. Kim, do you have any suspicions as to why Judge Liu did not make any finding with respect to collision?
I suspect that Judge Liu did not find a collision because there was, at the time, during trial court, there was no evidence of a collision. The collision was not an element that was brought up at all.
But Section 291.12 be read in such a way as to construe it, at least in the alternative, such that collision is not an element?
Oh, actually, the statute clearly and unambiguously reads with a disjunctive or, because it says without due care.
What comes before the or?
Without due care or in a manner as to cause.
Without due care.
Correct.
Nothing about a collision.
Correct.
So, isn't an issue what the language relating to collision modifies?
But correct. That is an issue. So if I can continue, there's a preliminary matter, actually, in this case that should be noted, which was that the defense entered into evidence a videotape of the parking lot where this incident occurred. However, unfortunately, the videotape was not made part of the record on appeal for unclear reasons. So I will address my argument based solely on the transcripts that were provided to us this morning. So the first issue is due care. Now, the state failed to prove that Mr. Bailey was driving without due care. And this can be shown based on two considerations. First, what was on the record, and second, what was missing from the record. So what does the evidence or lack of evidence show? Well, it basically shows that we have a parking lot that was flawed in design. Now, there are two main reasons why this parking lot was substandard and highly irregular. Number one are these yellow concrete bumpers in the parking stalls. These bumpers were, number one, movable, number two, not the whole length of the stall, and number three, positioned close enough to the edge of the parking stall that if you missed or passed it, it would cause your vehicle to go over the ledge. The second reason why the design of the parking lot was flawed is the fact that the end of the parking stall was the end of the parking lot that vertically dropped off onto Lower Main Street. Now, I'm going to be taking a minute now to explain in detail to help you visualize the parking lot where this incident occurred.
Ms. So, Kim,
yes.
Before you get to that, so are you saying that the yellow bumper did not extend through the parking stall or through the parking lot?
To the parking stall. So we have the parking lot itself was elevated off the ground, and there was about a steep 1.5-foot drop off the edge of the parking lot, and there was a 2-foot-wide grassy area that extended off the ledge, and then after the 2-foot grassy area, there was a vertical drop of about 8 feet down onto Lower Main Street. So given the physical setup of the parking lot, it was not unlikely for someone to drive over the ledge of the parking lot even while exercising due care. About 2 feet. And because of what we know and don't know, a number of things could have happened. Scenario one, the state argues that Mr. Bailey could have pushed the bumper out of the way or simply rolled over it because, again, these bumpers were movable. Scenario two, both tires could have missed the bump completely. There are no measurements as to how long these bumpers are, so if the bumper was here, the two tires could have missed it completely, and one of the tires could have fallen over the edge because these parking stalls were angled. And scenario three, We don't know how close these yellow bumpers were to the edge, but we know that it's close enough that should one of the tires have missed it, the tire would have gone off over the ledge of the parking lot. So what can be concluded from the facts and lack of facts? Well, there's insufficient evidence to show Mr. Bailey drove without due care, because it was reasonable for Mr. Bailey to rely on the touch of the bumper to help park his car, because that would signal to him when to stop. Now, it was reasonable for Mr. Bailey to also think that these yellow bumpers were fastened securely to the ground so that it cannot be pushed around or moved. And it was also reasonable for Mr. Bailey to think that these yellow bumpers would not be placed so close enough to the edge, serving as the only barrier between his vehicle and the vertical drop that would send his car down onto Lower Main Street. Now, intoxication is also an issue in this case. The trial court was correct in rejecting Dr. Wong's testimony because of two key timing considerations that are unknown. Number one, we don't know what time Mr. Bailey was actually driving or trying to park his car. Number two, we don't know when Mr. Bailey consumed his alcohol. All we know is that he had two beers, one at Mama's Fish House and one at Charlie's Bar. So we have no idea what his blood alcohol content level was when he was actually trying to park his car. So we don't know if his blood alcohol level was still going up or if he had reached his peak and his blood alcohol level was coming down. So the timing element is unclear. Now, it also should be noted that Mr. Bailey got into an argument with the resident manager where the parking lot was belonged to, and also there was a tow truck that had come and gone in an effort to take Mr. Bailey's truck off the ledge. So we have no idea how long these episodes took and how much time had elapsed before the officers came and saw Mr. Bailey on the scene.
Ms. Kim, are you saying that it's sufficient for the state to prove driving without due care in order to convict? Without any reference to a collision, injury, or damage.
What we're arguing is that there is insufficient evidence to convict based on due care.
Well, assuming there's driving without due care.
Yes.
Does the state still have to prove either a collision or injury or damage?
Yes. If there is no due care, that would be the alternative means into proving that. To prove a guilty conviction for inattention to driving. Does that answer your question?
Let me see if I understand, because I think Justice Acoba is honing in on what I was trying to. It's possible to read this statute in two ways, each involving alternative means of proving the offense.
Correct.
One way, focusing on the or,
mm-hmm.
Would be to prove that a defendant operated any vehicle without due care, period.
Yes.
The alternative under that reading would be any defendant who operated any vehicle in a manner as to cause a collision, etc. Do you subscribe to that view of the statute?
Yes, although we would happily subscribe to the alternative view, which would be the and interpretation, we do subscribe that it's without due care or a collision to sustain a guilty verdict for inattention to driving.
So the ICA was in error when it held that there were three elements that needed to be proved.
Well, yes, correct. Well, actually, the Momoki case is an ICA case that apparently was overlooked, because in the Momoki case, it clearly states that it is without due care or as an alternative means, it's a collision. So the Momoki case made that very clear, and it appears that the ICA had missed the Momoki case in making its...
Well, the parties did miss the Momoki case. No one brought that up. Did you bring that up? Or did the prosecutor raise the Momoki case, which states...
Not for that issue in particular, no.
Any issue?
The Momoki case was brought up because it's a prior inattention to driving case, but it was not brought up to address that specific issue.
Ms. Kim, is it your position that someone who drives without due care, without causing a collision, without causing injury or damage, can be convicted of a crime?
Yes, because we accept how the statute reads. And
does that help your position?
Well, it helps. I don't think that's relevant in this argument, because what we are arguing is that Mr. Bailey did exercise due care, and Mr. Bailey was not involved in a collision. So even if we were to take the or interpretation,
care, though, is the equivalent of negligence, and isn't
yes.
that essentially a fact question, and so to be determined by the fact finder?
Yes.
And the fact finder found that he was negligent.
Well, actually, that is why we're arguing that based on the facts that Mr. Bailey was not negligent, and the reason why Mr. Bailey got into the accident was not because he was negligent, but because of the poor design of the parking lot, which caused his vehicle to go over the ledge. So that, based on those facts, Mr. Bailey was not negligent and was exercising due care. So continuing on with the intoxication argument, we are not disputing that intoxication is not a relevant factor in the due care analysis. And we're not disputing that Mr. Bailey showed signs of intoxication when Officer Hada arrived. But again, it cannot be conclusively determined that Mr. Bailey was intoxicated at the time that he was actually trying to park his car. Now, the lack of due care cannot be drawn from intoxication itself. The court must look at other circumstances under which the accident occurred to determine whether or not the driver was exercising due care. Now, the courts in Mitchell and Tamahana did exactly that. They took into consideration other circumstances that could be an explanation for why the accident occurred. Now, in the Mitchell case, the defendant was convicted because there was an accident and he was intoxicated. And they found that that was enough. And the defendant was convicted based on extreme intoxication. However, that's all the court had in Mitchell, was the manner in which the defendant drove and extreme intoxication. However, the court looked at the record and there weren't enough facts to attribute the accident to something else. And in this case, unlike Mitchell, we have a lot of factual information, physical evidence as to why it wasn't Mr. Bailey who was not exercising due care, but in fact it was the parking lot that serves as an alternative explanation as to why the accident happened.
Was there a collision in this case?
Yes, there was a collision.
Your position is there was a collision?
In the Mitchell case?
I'm sorry. In the Instant case?
Oh, no, in the Instant case there is no collision.
Why?
Well, there is no collision because based on the case that was cited in the application for cert, the Brown case, the Brown versus Union Indemnity case, a collision cannot occur between a vehicle and the surface or the road upon which it's driving on. That is not a collision. And as I was preparing for this oral argument, I was able to come across two Hawaii Supreme Court cases that was much older. It was decided back in 1923 that also support the finding that a collision cannot occur with the surface or the road that you are driving on. And those two cases would be the Alexander v. Home Insurance Company case and also the Royal Hawaiian Sales versus Home Insurance of Hawaii. Now, the Brown case specifically makes reference to a collision and that a collision refers to some other object than the road upon which the automobile is being operated. Being already upon the road and in contact with it, there can be no collision in the sense that the term contemplates two separated objects coming together. And also, the ICA used the State v. Williams case to show collision. They use the Williams case to say that a vehicle must nevertheless collide with another object. Well, the Williams case actually clarifies what happened in this situation and actually supports Mr. Bailey's view. In Williams, the Supreme Court reversed the district court's decision because there was no evidence of a collision that was found. There was no debris on the ground, there were no skid marks, and there were no damages. Here we have the same circumstances. There were no marks indicating that a collision had occurred, and there were no damages. What Williams does that is significant, that is relevant to this case, is that it makes a clear distinction between an accident and a collision. And in the Williams case, it was clearly stated that a collision cannot be used synonymously with an accident. Okay? So what we have most in this case is not a collision, but an accident.
Make any finding as to injury or damage?
No, there were absolutely no findings in regards to injury or damages. Officer Ojeda testified that he did not notice any damage to the vehicle or the property. And if there are no further questions at this point, I would like to reserve the remaining of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice and Justices of the Hawaii Supreme Court. My name is Renee Ishikawa DeLizzo, representing the state of Hawaii. On this case of State versus Bailey, we would like to emphasize that we are looking at the sufficiency of the evidence, and we are looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, in the strongest light.
Ms. Ishikawa DeLizzo, just going back to the matter of statutory construction that we were kicking around with Ms. Kim. What's your take on the, do you see the statute as enumerating alternative modes of committing the offense?
Yes.
What are those alternatives?
Well, as the reading that I think we are taking with respect to the statute is, we're looking at the manner and the operation of the vehicle, the manner of driving and operation.
What are the two alternatives?
One alternative would be the lack of due care, or driving in a manner to cause collision or injury or damage to a person or vehicle or other property.
Those are the two alternatives. That's what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Hypothetically, my wife is a BMW nut. I'm driving to work down Beretania Street, and I see a brand new snazzy BMW 1. And I'm momentarily distracted by that sight. I turn to the left as I pass the car so that I can get a better look. I remain within the markings of my lane. I don't exceed the speed limit. I don't cause a collision. Injury does not result. Damage does not result. Clearly, or at least arguably, I've been negligent in taking my eyes off the portion of the roadway I should be focusing on. Wouldn't it be rather absurd to be deemed guilty of the offense of inattention to driving under those conditions?
I can see your point with regards to this particular statute. The question that I thought of when you were going through that example would be, how would it, in most cases...
What if a police officer was in his patrol car and observed me being distracted by this BMW 1 and not paying attention for a few moments to what I ought to be paying attention to, and he pulls me over and he cites me for inattention to driving. Am I guilty?
I believe we have to look at the definition of negligent under HRS 702-206.
Well, let's assume I was negligent.
Okay.
Am I guilty?
I think in that definition it talks about a substantial and unjustifiable risk, and what you have described I don't think amounts to that.
Well, there but for fortune, I might have rear-ended someone.
This is true.
Am I guilty?
I think we're looking also at the standard to apply, which would be a reasonably prudent person under the circumstances.
Yeah, let's assume I fail that one, too. I shouldn't have been distracted by the BMW one. Am I guilty?
We're assuming that this is what you're given, that yes, you were negligent.
I drove without due care. Period. Am I guilty?
Well, I guess under that reading you would be.
Do you see any absurdity in that?
Well, if the court is saying that this is a substantial and unjustifiable risk, I would tend to say no, it's not a substantial and unjustifiable risk, but if that is a given, then yes.
What I'm really probing is the question whether the result of a collision or the result of injury or damage to person, vehicle, or property is not an element of this offense under either alternative. I'm not suggesting the answer, but I'm posing the question.
I believe the state's position is that collision is not a required element of this charge. And recently in the Reyes case, which was in 1977 under the inattention to driving. The statute making inattention to driving offense requires only showing of negligence in operation of vehicle, that is, failure to exercise that care which a reasonably prudent person would have exercised under given circumstances.
But there was a collision in Reyes, was there not?
As I recall, the only issue
in Reyes was whether the prosecution had established the requisite state of mind. It was a given that a collision resulted from the defendant's conduct. Isn't that so?
Yes, it was. There was a collision in Reyes. I think, though, that the court was summarizing what the statute requires. And I believe if the court had required a collision, it would have said so in this opinion.
But in the Reyes case, what was the negligent act?
The defendant was trying to make a left turn from a two-lane highway onto a gravel road, moved from the right to the left lane, struck from behind by a vehicle which was overtaking a line of three cars.
But he didn't utilize his signal.
Right? Yes, correct. He didn't make a signal, and he didn't change lanes without ascertaining it would be safe to do so.
So that's what the court stated, that the inattention was not using his signal, correct?
Yes. So going back to the case law on this...
Delizio. Do you disagree with the Brown case cited by the petitioner as to the
of a collision? Yes, I think in our briefs we did submit a different definition. And it was in reference to Williams, the Williams case, the court did, in that opinion, define collision. Collision is defined as the act or instance of colliding, violent encounter, or forceful striking together, typically by accident, and so as to harm or impede, based on the Webster's Third New International Dictionary of 1993. In our briefs, in the answering brief to the Intermediate Court of Appeals, we also included the Black's Law Dictionary, defining collision as striking together of two objects, one which may be stationary. Active instance of colliding, state of having collided, the term implies an impact or sudden contact of a moving body with an obstruction in its line of motion, whether both bodies are in motion or one stationary and the other, no matter which, in motion. So, yes, we would differ with...
Do the facts here fit the definition in Williams?
The facts in this case, yes. I think in the testimony, it came out that the frame, the bottom frame of the truck had collided with the surface of the parking lot itself, the concrete parking lot. So there was actually, our position would be there was a collision.
Well, what was it in Williams that this court held did not constitute a collision?
In this case, there was the possibility that the defendant fell off his vehicle. When the officer came upon the defendant, he was sitting 15 feet away from the motorcycle. He did have injuries to his mouth and lip. The officer's testimony was that based on his investigation, Williams fell off the bike.
And the argument, the prosecution's argument in Williams, was that the motorcycle striking the ground constituted the collision. Isn't that so?
Here it said that the prosecution argues the fact that Williams was involved in a motor vehicle accident as opposed to a collision does not preclude the police from obtaining a blood sample under the implied consent. So they were distinguishing accident from collision, yes, in that case.
Different statute.
Yes.
Counsel, at the ICA, you took a different position than you're taking today.
In terms of collision, are you saying?
Well, in terms of the alternative, proving the alternative. The ICA went through all of the elements of the statute, analyzed that each one and said that each one had been met. You did not raise the alternative, that all you had to do was a lack of due care, correct?
Well, in our argument, it does, subpoint one, trial court did not err in concluding that appellant operated his truck without due care. That is in the answering brief.
Let me share the problem that I'm having with the alternative reading. The other way you could squint at the statute and perceive two alternatives. I don't think the drafting of this statute in 1971 was the legislature's finest hour. Let's suppose that one alternative means of committing this offense is operating a vehicle without due care as to cause a collision, etc. And the other alternative is operating a vehicle in a manner as to cause a collision, etc. Let's say those are the two alternatives. Doesn't that render the language without due care or utterly surplusage? Because they're both the same thing, aren't they?
Well, I can't speak for the legislature, but perhaps the legislature envisioned circumstances where it might have been negligent driving that did not involve a collision, injury, or
all right, so
damage.
You're re-endorsing the first take on the statute, which is alternative one is operating a vehicle without due care, period. That constitutes a violation of or a commission of the offense. And operating a vehicle in a manner as to cause a collision, et cetera, is the other means of committing this offense.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's what you're sticking with today.
Yes, Your Honor. And just to go over, go ahead.
Did you indicate that that is the position you took below at the ICA by referring to an argument that there was a showing or proof of lack of due care?
Yes, in our answering brief, as I previously stated, we did argue that the trial court did not err. Appellant operated his truck without due care, and subpoint 3, the state adduced evidence that appellant's truck collided with the parking lot surface.
Well, that indicates to me that you were arguing that it met all, that the facts met all of the elements of the statute.
I believe that the state was trying to cover all the bases here under a reading of the statute. And I believe also that the state in the answering brief did say that even though a mere accident in itself is not enough to establish inattention to driving, which was under, mere collision under Tamanaha, on the flip side, we argued in the answering brief that collision was not a necessary element and that there were other means of committing inattention to driving.
You didn't argue there was any injury or damage, did you?
Correct.
So you rest basically on the proposition that there was a collision in this case. Assume we're looking at the second alternative way, that you rest on the proposition that there was a collision in this case.
At the trial level or at the appellate level?
Well, what was your position at the trial level?
I think the trial level, they were focusing on the manner of his driving.
Okay.
He didn't really necessarily emphasize the collision.
At the appellate level, you rested on the proposition that there was a collision. Is that right?
I think we argued both in the answering brief, that there was due care in his driving the vehicle into the parking lot stall.
You're looking at that portion of your position that says there was a collision. There is a Hawaii case, the Alexander case, that the petitioner cited, which indicated, although the facts are different, that when a vehicle does come into contact with the ground, that isn't a collision. Just using, and I think the court said, the general understanding of the term. Do you disagree with that reading of Alexander?
We disagree in terms of the other definitions that I've read. It would include contact with the ground or surface.
Counsel, was the defendant charged orally in this case?
There was a complaint.
A written complaint?
Yes, there was.
What does the written complaint allege? Do you have the written complaint with you?
I'm sorry, I think I left that at home.
Do you have a memory? In other words, is it your recollection that the written complaint alleged that the defendant operated a vehicle in a manner as to cause a collision? Or did the complaint merely allege that the defendant operated a vehicle without due care, or did the complaint allege something else?
That is a good point, Your Honor. I don't want to guess. I'm sorry. It would be in the record, though. So we would just want to emphasize that the facts of this case show it, when considered in the strongest light to the state, show that a lack of due care in the operation of the vehicle also show that there was, in fact, a collision of Mr. Bailey's truck to the pavement. And we would like to emphasize that appellate on appeal, we need not determine that the evidence shows negligence as a matter of law, but merely that the evidence shows a possibility that negligence could be found as a matter of fact. And this was State versus Tamanaha, 1962. In the facts of this case, the way that the officer came upon Mr. Bailey's truck when he came to the scene, the driver's side tire was over the yellow bumper, off the concrete parking lot, onto the dirt area, and stuck so it could not reverse out on its own. The truck itself was dipped downwards, less than a foot from the edge of the wall, and the officer, I think, noted that if the truck had gone any farther, it would have fallen down onto Lower Main Street, which was 7 to 8 feet below the parking area.
Do you think the ordinary person who has to, remember, ordinary persons have to follow the law, and if that's the standard we use, would consider driving over the edge of a parking lot by 1 foot a collision?
Well, it would be a collision, yes, because when you're parking your vehicle, you're not driving fast. You're driving slow, and you're trying to pay attention to where your vehicle is positioned with reference to your circumstances. Certainly, one should be able to press the brake pedal as soon as a problem is noted.
In Alexander, the court said, well, you know, we have these two positions. One saying a collision is an impact. And that makes logical sense, you know. But we feel that we should read the term as the ordinary person would. And an ordinary person, at least in the Hawaii Supreme Court's opinion at that time, would not read the term collision as including the situation where the vehicle came in contact with the road. So, if Alexander is precedent, shouldn't we follow that?
Yes, unless it can be distinguished on the facts. And I'm not up on the facts in that case, so leave that to your discretion. But I would like to note Dr. Wong's testimony on the position of the truck. He testified that the truck that went over the bump, hanging over the parking lot border, showed misjudgment of distance of application of force on the gas pedal. Misjudgment of application of force on the gas pedal or reaction time. And in totality with the signs and indicia of intoxication, which is a factor in determining lack of due care, we would argue that given the circumstances, there was lighting in this parking lot, the truck lights would have enabled Mr. Bailey to see where he was going. Again, the speed when you're parking your vehicle is not a fast speed. The fact that there was collision of his truck to the pavement, the bottom frame of the truck, and that it did, it was so collided in a manner that there was, the driving showed that there was a potential for injury or damage to other people or property had the truck gone further. There's a possibility in the light most favorable to the state. And we would, again, like to say under Eastman, indeed, even if it could be said in a bench trial that the conviction is against the weight of the evidence, as long as there is substantial evidence to support the requisite findings for conviction, the trial court will be affirmed. Thank you.
Did the prosecution at the ICA level argue the alternative?
The trial court argued, didn't even bring or mention collision, and the collision argument was brought up on the ICA level. So in order to address, I guess...
The argument before the ICA by the prosecution argued that the statute would allow an alternative.
The way the ICA wrote its summary disposition order in this case, no, they didn't. They did not read this.
Did the prosecution take that position? Did they argue that it was an alternative situation, due care or collision?
Yes, that's how they
did.
Well, actually, I'm not quite sure what Ms. Ishikawa DeLuzzo was arguing. It is unclear to me.
What was the charge in this case?
Well, actually, Mr. Bailey was initially just charged with an OUI, and I don't have the complaint either, but Mr. Bailey was charged initially with OUI, and we have no idea when...
At some point, I hope Mr. Bailey was charged with inattention to driving.
And he was.
What was the charge?
The charge that, it's unclear if it was because he was driving without due care or if it was a collision.
He was either charged orally, in which case somebody said something, or he was charged by written complaint, in which case there's a writing charging the offense of inattention to driving. What was the substance of that charge?
Well, the substance of that charge was that Mr. Bailey was driving without due care because he had his truck.
Did the charge allege that Mr. Bailey was driving either without due care or in a manner as to cause a collision?
Now, are you referring to what exact words were used when
yes.
he was charged?
In other words, what were the elements of the offense that were alleged in the charging instrument?
Well, that would be what the statute says, which is with driving without due care or in a manner as to cause a collision.
So it's your recollection that the written complaint tracked the language of the statute from start to finish?
I didn't get to see the written complaint as I was just assigned to work on the application.
So you don't know the answer.
No, so I don't know. I was just working on the writ.
One of the things you should look at is the written complaint. And the written complaint is in the language of the statute.
So from here on, I will make sure to look at the written complaint. But
particularly when you're arguing whether there was a failure of proof with respect to an element of the offense.
Yes. Well, in order to answer your question, Justice Levinson, on the interpretation of the statute, it was brought to my attention when my colleagues and my friends at the prosecutors that I was arguing in an inattention to driving case that there is some discrepancy at the district court level on how the statute is interpreted. And then depending on which judge is sitting before the court, it's either the and interpretation, due care and collision, or the or interpretation, which is due care without due care or collision. Now, we would be more than happy to accept if this court so finds that both elements are required. Because I believe Justice Levinson said, wouldn't it be absurd to convict someone who was changing lanes, that wasn't exercising due care, and criminally prosecute them for inattention to driving?
My hypothetical, I wasn't even changing lanes. I remained completely within my lane. The movement of the vehicle was not affected one iota by my lack of due care, and yet I was operating without due care for a moment.
Correct. So
that should be your position, shouldn't it? That would be an absurd reading.
Correct,
of the statute.
Correct. And I would absolutely agree with Justin
Levinson. So that should be your position here.
Yes. And I would also say that it would be absurd to define collision in a way that if one was driving and the bottom of your car scraped a speed bump or hit a pothole, to say that's enough to sustain sustain an inattention to driving conviction is also absurd. So if we were to look at the statute and say that we should require more than just without due care or just a collision, I would agree that both elements should be required in its interpretation of this inattention to driving statute.
But then we have the problem of language in the statute that is surplusage, do we not?
Yes. As you mentioned earlier, I believe, to the prosecutor, to the state, that it's kind of reiterating, it's without due care is, if you have a collision, it's kind of as if you drove without due care. Was that what you were referring to earlier?
Yes, it would. I mean, that reading of the statute would render the language without due care on the one hand, or in a manner as to cause on the other hand, the same thing, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Well, is that right? Is that your position?
No, well, my position is that, well, if we were to keep these two elements separate, then, I mean, I see Justice Levinson's point on how driving without due care and having a collision overlaps. However, if we were to clarify the reading of the statute, that perhaps we should say that it's without due care and add the collision as an additional element, as the ICA did, if the court would like to clarify the statute through those means.
Well, wouldn't your position be the same as the prosecution, that the term due care refers, or lack of due care, refers to negligence? But
yes,
the legislature went on to say, or in any other manner, in indicating behavior or conduct that may be with due care but still causes injury.
Yes.
So your position would be the same as a prosecution, wouldn't it?
Well, yes. Well, initially,
doesn't that beg the question? Because if it doesn't matter whether a defendant is operating the vehicle without due care, but it's sufficient that the defendant is simply operating the vehicle in such a manner as to cause a collision, then of what significance is it that the defendant operated the vehicle without due care so as to cause a collision? In other words, the presence or absence of negligence would be irrelevant, ultimately.
But if you interpret it that way, then there wouldn't be any surplusage. Would there?
Yes, there wouldn't be.
Well, wouldn't the without due care language be surplusage? Because even in the absence of due care, you could have a violation. If a collision as a result of conduct was an element under either circumstance.
Well, I think there's a difference between driving without due care and and convicting someone for driving without toucan.
All right, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm.
Because there might not be any culpable conduct.
Right.
Still, there would be damage.
Correct.
I operate a vehicle in a manner as to cause a collision. That violates the statute, does it not?
If you operate yes.
All right. And I operate a vehicle without due care so as to cause a collision. That's a violation of the statute, isn't it?
Yes.
So it doesn't matter whether I'm negligent or not?
No, it does. Well, I guess it would matter, Your Honor, with all due respect, because you could drive without due care and still be convicted of inattention to driving, because in the absence of a collision, because
so on the due care side of the or, whether there is a collision or not it's really neither here nor there. A collision is not an element
of that form of offense.
That your position?
Yes, that's my position.
That shouldn't be your position, should it?
I think that's why we're all here because of the language of the statute.
If you look at a statute and it's written so that everyone can understand it, you would think that the lack of due care is something everyone cannot understand.
Yes.
But if the legislature wanted to extend that to non-culpable conduct, because we can all assume culpable conduct should be punished.
Correct.
But if you want to extend the statute to non-culpable state of mind, but that still results in some kind of damage.
Then you would still need to hold the driver responsible.
Then you might write it that way.
Correct.
Anything further, Ms. Kim?
Well, in order to address some of the other points that were made by the state, Justice Okowa mentioned the Brown case and whether or not that was a collision. We happily accept the definition that the state provides. We accept both the definition provided in the Williams case as well as the definition provided by the Black's Law Dictionary. And it basically, just in a nutshell, it's whether you hit an obstruction that is in your line of motion. And as mentioned earlier, using the Brown case, you cannot collide with the road or surface that you are driving on. And Justice Levinson mentioned that in the Williams case, there was no collision because the facts were that the motorcycle made contact with the ground. And here we have that same type of facts. The vehicle was what made contact with the ground. So, like Williams, we should find that there was no collision in this case. Justice Okoba mentioned the Alexander case, and it was a good thing that I was able to find that case before coming before this court, that contact with the ground does not suffice or is not enough to find a collision. And that is certainly true, again, similar in this case, where the bottom of the truck made contact with the surface of the parking lot, and that again is similar enough facts to show that a collision had not occurred. Now, the state uses Tamahana as a way to show that Mr. Bailey should also be convicted of inattention to driving, but if we can take a second to distinguish Tamahana, that court took into consideration other factors that could be relevant in finding the defendant guilty of inattention to driving, and that key factor was speeding. So the defendant was found to be improperly driving because he was using excessive speed, and that is why the defendant was found guilty in the Tamahana case, which is distinguishable from this case because Mr. Bailey was not speeding and there were no other indications that it was improperly operating his vehicle. Now, the state also mentioned Dr. Wong's testimony on intoxication and about the reaction time that Mr. Bailey was not able to stop in time. However, the state also said that had Mr. Bailey gone a foot further, his entire truck would have fallen off the ledge. And that's absolutely true, and that makes our point that Mr. Bailey did stop in time. His reaction time was not impaired by his driving, because had he gone a foot further, had he not pressed on the brakes when he realized the second that his truck was going over, his truck would have ended up on Lower Main Street. And in conclusion, my office trusted me. This is a simple case, which is why my office probably trusted me to do the oral argument 2 weeks after being hired. And in order to prepare this case, I took it seriously, and I did something unusual, which is I drove around to different parking lots that had these yellow concrete bumpers. And no. But in conclusion, the reason why there is that Mr. Billy was exercising due care was that it was reasonable for him to park his car and to rely on the yellow bumpers, and we cannot conclusively find that Mr. Billy was driving his car in the absence of due care. And as for the collision element, because of the definition that was provided by both the Brown case and the Hawaii State Supreme Court cases, namely Alexander, a collision cannot be found when the vehicle makes contact with the surface of the ground. So here we clearly don't have a collision, and in order to just fine-tune that point in the Williams case, what we have here is not a collision, but an accident. So at this point, I would like to conclude and hope that this court reverses the lower court's decision. Thank you.
We take this matter under advisement.
Please rise. Some of the Supreme Court's opinion is now.